The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
We're excited to do a special edition of Women of Washington today. Our topic is women-led businesses. Our first guest is Erin Andrew, Assistant Administrator at the U.S. Small Business Administration for the Office of Women's Business Ownership. She oversees the agency's efforts to promote the growth of women-owned businesses through advocacy and programs that provide business training and counseling, access to credit, and multiple businesses and networking opportunities.
So, Erin, before we talk about the Office of Women's Business Ownership, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to your current role?
I grew up on a farm in Indiana, so it was very entrepreneurial. When you live in the middle of nowhere, you find fun in anything. So I think that kind of started my path and my journey. But I was really interested in entrepreneurship at a young age. I went to college and majored in business, but also did a double in ethics, history, and public policy, and wanted to merge the two. I wanted to have an impact on the social side of things, on the public side of things. And we didn't have these double, triple bottom line type businesses back then. It was kind of, you do business and you go this way, you do public policy and you go this way. And so for me, public policy was something that was very interesting. My mother was a guidance school counselor, so really interested in workforce development and preparing kids and students for the real world. And my father was in economic development. So I kind of merged the two and ended up doing a real focus on economic development and worked in local economic development in Pittsburgh for a while, which was a great city. I had a great time. And then ended up doing management consulting, wanted to really hone in on my skills. So did management consulting here locally for a while and worked with the federal government and was able to help find solutions and efficiencies in different agencies, which I really enjoyed. And then I sort of felt like, you know, I think everyone in their life, they take different risks. And for me, I'd always wanted to work on a campaign. My brother was in Iraq at the time. It was his second tour as an infantry soldier. And I just felt like he was there and what impact I really wanted to have an impact and wanted to do what I could on the policy side and really impact policy. And so I decided to leave and I went to Iowa and worked on a campaign, helped run a statewide campaign, and then had the opportunity and was very lucky to work for the governor there for a few years doing workforce development, worked with our National Guard, did economic development, worked with our finance authority, and it was an excellent experience. It was a wonderful state. And then I wanted to come back to Washington, D.C., so was able to kind of merge again the public-private sector experience and come to the National Governors Association, where I was able to work with different governors' offices, which was a lot of fun. But at the time, the downturn was happening, and we all remember that, 2008. And we were working a lot on training programs and helping states train, you know, a large workforce that had lost jobs. And I just remember hearing from a lot of the workforce practitioners that we're training all of these folks, which is so great, but there are no jobs. We're not starting businesses. We're not growing businesses. And we don't have anywhere to put them. But we have some great trained folks. We just don't have anywhere to, you know, put them. So for me, I wanted to get back into sort of the economic development entrepreneurship space and came to SBA to do that.
So, Erin, that's such an amazing journey and story. Did you have any inspirations or aha moments that made you realize that you wanted to focus on women's businesses like that?
Yeah, you know, Warren Buffett had this quote that came out, and I had this aha moment a little before that, but I think he phrased it very well, where he said that, you know, as a nation, we've been using about 50% of our power. And I really started to think about it. And you look at the numbers for women-owned businesses, we've seen a huge growth. We've seen almost 28% growth in women-owned businesses from 2007 to 2012. But still, there is such an opportunity. And I always take it back to when I used to play sports as a kid. I used to compete. My parents prepared me to compete with the boys and the girls and you know, whether it be a baseball or softball or soccer. And I just always felt like women had this wonderful opportunity. And throughout the decades, we've been able to kind of step up more and more and more and really own the power that we have, whether it be in the workforce, whether it be starting businesses. And I just felt like, especially now, there was an opportunity. It's a huge untapped resource. But I also felt like there were still some challenges. And I know we've talked a little bit about the investment space, the venture capital space, even the women accessing capital space. And so for me, when I started looking at the opportunities in the women's business ownership space, I felt like there are so many tools out there, but so many more women that could be and should be utilizing those tools.
Today, we're talking with Erin Andrew, Assistant Administrator, SBA. Erin, you know, when I first asked you the question about your background, you mentioned that your mom was a guidance counselor. Yeah. And so the thought that crossed my mind is, wow, how lucky, because so many people try to really struggle figuring out what they want to do. It must be so great to have a guidance counselor in the family. But was she your biggest sort of inspiration growing up?
Yeah, no, I would say both my parents, my mom and my dad, absolutely. And then I always talk about my grandmother. So my dad's mom grew up in Canada, single mother, raised her, and she took no for an answer. She wanted to be an entomologist growing up and was told no because she was a woman, so she became a chemist, but she worked really, really hard. And she always told me growing up at a young age, you know, in this day and age, a woman has the opportunity that she never had back then. And so to really take hold of that opportunity, to really grasp onto it and make the most of it. And women nowadays can, you know, have family, have career, and follow their passion. And so I think my grandmother, you know, had a lot of hardships. She grew up in a not so great situation, but really rose from that. Married my grandfather, moved to a farm in Indiana. My whole family, both my parents were part-time farmers as well. My brother and I have a hops business too, so we stay in the farming family. So I think you just learn hard work, and I think I was taught that not only by my parents, but also my grandmother, to persevere.
I also read when I was reading about your background that you're a Kauffman Fellow. So I didn't know what that was. Tell me about that.
Yes. So the Kauffman Fellows program is a fellowship focused on venture capitalists. And it's an executive leadership program. The majority of the folks in the program are venture capitalists, but they also have other people from the ecosystem. They have some accelerators, some folks in policy. And the idea is really to look at the investment space and to look at where small businesses, you know, are getting investments and to really prepare those investors of the next generation. So it's been a great experience thus far.
Let's fast forward a little bit, Erin, and let's talk about your role at SBA and the programs that you manage there. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do for women there at SBA?
Yes, no, absolutely. So, you know, SBA, I always say we're a federal agency, and I always joke that we don't have an advertising budget. So it's all about earned media. So we have so much available for entrepreneurs, especially women entrepreneurs. So in my role as head of the Office of Women's Business Ownership, we have three major focus areas. Number one, we have over 100 women's business centers across the country that provide free and at low cost counseling and training. So if you're a business owner and you've not accessed SBA's free counseling, low cost counseling and training, please do so. Our women's business centers, like I said, are located at nonprofits. We also have small business development centers and our SCORE network, all great resources. So my office oversees those grants. That's number one. Number two, we really work with all of SBA's programs. We have access to capital programs. We do loan guarantees and we have microloans. We also work with different agencies on the federal contracting and helping to ensure that the federal government is making their federal contracting goals. And there's one specific set aside for women as well. And we also work with our debt and equity programs and our Office of Innovation and Investments, and also our exporting programs and our Office of International Trade. So that's kind of the second focus of the office, is to really work with those other program offices to identify how women are doing in those programs and are there policies or other things that we could really look at changing or expanding to include more women, and also leveraging our network of national women's business organizations. So that's number two. And then number three is just public-private partnerships. And Innovate Her, I know we'll talk about in a little bit, is one of those examples of a public-private partnership.
I read recently that there's several agencies that are not making their goals for women small-owned businesses. And the status of women small business-owned businesses have really changed. They're now on equal footing for getting that bucket of business as a small disadvantaged 8A businesses. Have you seen some improvement in that?
Oh, absolutely. So 23% of all federal spend needs to go to small businesses. That's the goal. And SBA works with those different agencies to ensure that they make that goal. Some do better than others, and we encourage and continue to work to make sure that those agencies have small businesses that can procure and work with them. Well, I'm really excited to say we've had this 5% goal for women-owned small businesses, and usually the response I get is 5%? Only 5% of federal spend goes to women-owned small businesses? We've had that goal since 1998. And I'm very excited to say 2 weeks ago, for the first time, we were able to meet that goal. We just announced it. It is a great, great accomplishment. We still have, you know, we have more to go. And I know that we're probably going to start looking at what the future holds and where we can expand that. But to have made that goal after it being on the books for so long is just an incredible accomplishment for women. And we need more women accessing federal government contracts, to be honest.
5% seems small when 50% of the population is women.
Exactly.
We're speaking with Erin Andrew, Assistant Administrator, SBA. Coming up, we'll hear about SBA's Innovate Her Challenge. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, we're talking with Erin Andrew, Assistant Administrator, SBA.
So, Erin, your office sponsors Innovate Her, a women's business summit. Can you tell us about Innovate Her?
Yes, absolutely. Well, if you look at the number of women-owned businesses today, we have 9.9 million women-owned businesses. About 30% of the businesses in this country are women-owned, which is excellent. But only 10% of them have employees. So we've been really thinking about growth strategies to get more women-owned businesses to kind of grow their business. And then we started looking at the stats, and actually Innovate Her came out of a girls' weekend where a lot of my friends, I had a really good friend who was breastfeeding at the time and talking about the breast pump and was very frustrated with how the breast pump could be more efficient, could be, you know, not quite as loud. And we had this conversation and we started thinking, oh, what if we started a business focused on building a better breast pump? Well, MIT had a hackathon shortly thereafter this weekend where they had a lot of people looking at solutions for the breast pump. But I started thinking in the federal government, you know, if you look at the stats, less than 5% of venture funding goes to women-owned businesses. Women make up about 5% of venture capitalists, but have 85% of the purchasing power in this country. In addition, more women are in the workforce now than ever before. So when you talk about something like a breast pump, it's important to have an efficient breast pump if you have a working mother. And I think a lot of women can relate to that. So we started thinking we need to kind of identify and build a platform for products, services, inventions that impact women's and working families' lives. And really, I think have two goals. Number one, locally have conversations about the need to have these types of efficiencies, to be able to talk about needing a better breast pump because it impacts a woman's time at work with her family and other things. Also, we needed to have the opportunity to really identify some of these products and services that could be commercialized to have the impact we were talking about. So that's sort of how Innovate Her was born. It was trying to find a solution for some market challenges that currently exist.
And so how many years have you been doing the Business Summit?
So this is actually, we've done it twice. We started it out in last year. We did our initial launch to even see if there was interest. You know, we kind of had to test it out and we were shocked. We did this early last year, did a call to action to organizations to host business competitions focused on products and services that make women's and working families' lives better, that really impact their lives. And we got over 100 people, 100 organizations that signed up and hosted these competitions. And each competition had anywhere from 15 to 75 business owners or business ideas that, you know, were competing. And we held our finals in May and you know, selected the top three winners. And Microsoft was our partner for this and gave us prize money. And we decided as part of the president's demo day, because there was such an interest and because we had such a short timeline the first time we did it, to expand it. So we doubled the prize money. Microsoft thankfully came and doubled the prize money, and we have over doubled the amount at $70,000 this year. And then we wanted to double the number of local competitions. And these were happening in every state. I mean, Montana, New York, California, all over the country. And so we had over 200 competitions this fall, and we got 200, we touched over 2,500 business owners over the course of this whole thing. But we have the top 10, we selected out of the 200 semifinalists, the top 10 finalists to compete in Washington, D.C. And that's coming up here on March 17th, Thursday. In D.C., and we're doing it with the Atlantic Live, and Microsoft, again, is providing the prize money for that. So we're really excited about this opportunity.
And so you guys will, there will be a panel that chooses the top three of all of the semifinalist ideas, and then all three of them will get prize money?
Yes. Yep. We will break down the prize money, and they will split that $70,000. So we're really looking forward to this competition. And I think, and if folks want to tune in, they can go to sba.gov/innovate. Her, INNOVATEHER, so sba.gov/innovateher, and we'll be live streaming the whole thing so you can see some of these cool products and services.
I recently read a study that one of the biggest challenges for women starting business is raising capital. In the study, it said the new business owners receiving capital, less than 10% are women. What can we do about this?
So, no, it's a great question, and it's a huge challenge. One key difference between men and women entrepreneurs is that men are able to secure more capital from external sources than women. For male entrepreneurs, 60% of startup funding was raised from outside sources, such as bank loans or angel investors, compared to 48% for women entrepreneurs, and that includes the loans and the angel investing. And women entrepreneurs are recipients, like I mentioned, of just 19% of angel funding, but even less, closer to 5% of venture funding, which is incredible. So I think there are a lot of things. I think, you know, you've got your loans, you've got your debt is an option. And I talk a little bit about this because SBA has a loan guarantee and we also have a microloan program. We've done a lot on changing the underwriting of our smaller dollar loans. So it's easier now than it was before, especially on our working capital loan, our 7A loan, to get a loan that's under $150,000. Before, it would cost the bank, and I'm oversimplifying this a little bit, but it would cost the bank about the same to do a $5 million loan as it would to do a $150,000 loan. And we saw a lot of women, you know, in the service industries or maybe in industries that weren't quite as capital intensive. That's not to say we have a lot of women who are in capital intensive industries and we want them to keep growing and keep accessing capital. But it was really hard for women to get into the pipeline. So at SBA, our administrator, Contreras Sweet, and the entire agency really pushed to change this underwriting of the smaller dollar loan. So it's a little bit easier now than it was before. So that's one thing on the debt side that I think is really encouraging. I also want to say on our microloan side, 51% of our microloans go to women. So women are accessing on the microloan side. On the venture and the angel side, I think you're starting to see a shift. I think, but as their numbers show, sometimes it's declining. And I think there's a conversation happening now that I think is pretty critical because, as I mentioned, women are innovating. Women entrepreneurs are growing. They're starting more businesses. And they're going to want to have folks investing and understanding the products that they're investing in. So I think there's something to be said about women getting more capital than they have in the past. And I think there have been a lot of pushes in the venture side and the angel side. And you see a lot of women becoming investors now as well. And there are a lot of wonderful men that invest in women-owned businesses, which is also good. But I think in general, people are realizing the purchasing power in women, and both men and women investors are understanding they need to start investing. One other trend that I think has helped women, crowdfunding. Crowdfunding, a lot of it is marketing your product. It's not only getting the funding, but it's also a medium to market your product. And women are really good marketers in general. And there are men and women that are both great marketers, but in general, women are great at that. And so crowdfunding has been a real way to kind of democratize, access to capital that hasn't happened in the past. And women tend to over-index, especially if it's a mission-based business in the crowdfunding space, which is really promising. And I think with the SEC changes and with crowdfunding kind of opening up for small businesses, you are going to see some really great opportunities for women. So while things are a bit dim on the access to capital side. Changes are being made, and I'm hopeful that we'll have this conversation 10 years from now and the numbers will increase. I really hope so.
Erin, before we have an opportunity to talk to some of those Innovate Her finalists in our second half of the show, I got to ask you, what advice would you have for next year's finalists?
No, that's a great question. I think for next year's finalists, and I think for any small business, I always say this, and we talk a little bit about this, especially of women, to understand and to understand that failure is fine, to understand that failure is part of that journey. And I've heard a lot of people say fail forward is an important kind of thing to think about as you're starting and growing a business, because inevitably there are always going to be challenges. And I think for a lot of these Innovate Her companies, they're starting technologies that haven't existed before. They're starting trying to find money to help test these technologies. And I think there are a lot of ups and downs that go with that. And we talked a little bit how sometimes women can internalize failure a little bit more. And I just think for the sake of women having, you know, great, healthy, happy lives, we need inventions and we need innovations that really support that growth of women and the growth of women in the workforce. And I would say to them, understand that failure is part of the journey. And then also one piece of advice that I always give to small businesses is understand your exit strategy, especially in high growth businesses, but in any business. Are you going to sell the business? Do you want to sell it to a large company? Do you want to get out, you know, at a certain point? Is it a family business and you want to hand it down? And I think that's one thing that a lot of small businesses don't think about when they're starting, because you're kind of in the crazy of starting everything. And I know from my own experience, my brother and I have a business. It's always like, what are we going to do with this? But it's really good to have those conversations early on, so you understand how to get to that final goal or what that path. And don't get me wrong, it always changes. I mean, entrepreneurship changes, but at least you have kind of agreed upon understanding of what that goal is, so you can start to line up the activities to get there.
Erin, one last question. We kind of touched on the issue associated with the pipeline. You know, there's not that many women founders right now. We need to increase that. So if you were to go back in time to, you know, your younger self when you were graduating, what advice would you give that younger self today to help start her on that journey to start that business?
So, no, it's a great question. I think as a kid, I didn't have the fear of failure as much. I mean, I played sports. Like I said, I grew up on a farm. So you just run around and you can, you know, you have the freedom to kind of do whatever. I think the same advice I would give to the Innovate Her companies, failure is part of the journey. And I think oftentimes in academia, we look for the perfect, you know, the perfect grades, the perfect record. And you're so scared of failure that you're sometimes so fearful of stepping outside of the box and thinking a little differently about things. And I think for entrepreneurs, those that are so successful do that and understand how to do that well. I always say there's a stat out there. I think about 1/5 of U.S. entrepreneurs have a learning disability. And they say oftentimes because they're used to failing, they're used to doing things differently, thinking outside the box. And I think the grit that they have just to carry on is so important. So I think for anyone graduating, to have that type of freedom, to know that you can make it, you're going to fail along the way, and to have the confidence to get up and keep going is so, so critical. And I think when you graduate, you have all of these, you know, there's a lot of anxiety about what's next. Am I going to do this right? But to have faith in yourself and to have faith that no matter how deep those valleys can be, that you can kind of move forward.
We're speaking with Erin Andrew, Assistant Administrator, SBA. Erin, thanks so much for being with us today and telling us about Innovate Her. Coming up, we'll meet two of this year's challenge finalists. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Our guests today are Sasha Meyer and Christine Dotson, founders of Mamava, and Suzanne Shoemaker, founder of Undercare, all finalists this year with Innovate Her.
Sasha and Christine, let's start with you. Tell us about Mamava.
Well, Mamava is a freestanding lactation suite that provides moms with the privacy, comfort, and dignity to use a breast pump primarily, but if they choose to breastfeed.
And so where would you find these lactation stations?
We actually have many different channels that have been interested in them, and we have placements in airports, zoos, stadiums, private settings, private companies, as well as government buildings. So it really, in hospitals is another category that's big and seems to be growing for us.
I think I read somewhere on your website that, and I was unaware of this, but according to the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, there's now a provision that places need to provide a space for a breastfeeding mom that's not a bathroom. Is that the case?
Yes. So if you were an employer with more than 50 non-exempt employees, the mandate is you have to provide a space other than a restroom and the break time for a mom to use her breast pump. Or I suppose if her baby's coming into work, sometimes there's a nanny or a helper who can bring a baby in. And that's for a year. And there's many additional mandates in different municipalities across the country, including Philadelphia and Chicago and in other states that have additional legislation protecting a mom's right to continue to meet her breastfeeding goals.
What was the inspiration? Did it come from your own lives?
Yes, it did. Both Sasha and I are working mothers, and we had children and went back to work after taking a brief leave, and we had to travel a good amount. So we ended up at work, it was fine. We both had offices. We could close the door and pump. But when we were on the road, we found ourselves doing a lot of pumping in just really horrid places. Sasha's got a great story about being in the back of her client's car and bathrooms and basically wherever we could fit it in, and sometimes not being able to and being really uncomfortable. So for us, it was a problem we needed to solve, and we work at a design studio, and that's what we think about brands and meeting needs all day long. So we put our heads together and came up with this idea.
Suzanne, tell us about Undercare.
Well, a few years ago, I had been swimming at the YMCA in White Plains, New York, and following the swim class, I was in the locker room with some elderly women who had been taking an arthritis class. And I observed the difficulty they had self-dressing. I was taken aback by the determination they had in trying to dress themselves. And they were using these long grabby stick poles, which are long poles with pinchers on the end. And they were using them to guide their feet and legs through the leg opening of their underwear. So I'm trained as an artist in painting and drawing the human figure. And I guess my training kicked in. And as I was observing them, I thought to myself, what if I could design undergarments that did not require someone to bend, balance, or stand on one leg in order to get dressed. So that's exactly what I did.
That's quite an inspirational story, especially with all the veterans coming back that might need something like that. Who are some of your biggest customers? I mean, that's so inspirational. You must feel so good about helping those people.
Well, interesting that you would mention the veterans. We are very interested in reaching the veteran population. We were very inspired by the story of Lieutenant Colonel Tammy Duckworth, whose Black Hawk went down in 2004 in Iraq, and she became the first female double amputee. When she awoke in Walter Reed Hospital 2 weeks later, she was provided with a care package that had socks, razors, and men's briefs. And this just should never have happened. She should have been given Undercare. But I want to say that we offer our products to our injured male warfighters and female warfighters with equal enthusiasm. But if you are struggling with, if you're recovering from surgery, if you're in a leg cast or a fixator brace on your leg, if you become dizzy from bending over and coming up from medication, or if you're in a wheelchair or bedridden, Undercare can help. We believe in maintaining dignity and independence through self-dressing.
So, ladies, it's one thing to have a great idea, but it's another thing to bring that idea to life. So, Sasha and Christine, I'll go back to you. How, you came up with this idea. It was inspired by your own life, struggles trying to find a good place to pump or to breastfeed. How did you then bring that dream to reality? And what challenges did you face along the way?
We like to use this motto, fail fast, fail cheap. And that has to do with the fact that you need to press forward and do rapid prototyping. We made prototypes out of foam core. We made a prototype out of plywood. We shared the idea with a lot of different contacts and resources in the design world. And ultimately, we found somebody who specialized in kiosks and knew the channels of airports specifically and malls and understood what the high impact of those locations meant for wear and tear on things. We wrote a very, very solid brief of what we wanted. And then this expert, David Jacks, came back with a beautiful design. Sort of, it was a magical moment for us in terms of here it is on paper. And then he comes back with a fully realized design after a bunch of trial and error working on our own.
And Suzanne, how about you? Same question, right? How did you get this from an inspiration when you were in that locker room at the Y to actually having product?
Well, I came home and I was telling my family about the idea. My children said, "Mom, you always have these great ideas. You never do anything about it." So I took some underwear and started cutting it up and sewing it and made hand-sewn prototypes. So, you know, one thing led to another and I developed a workable prototype. And the next step was patenting. So I went to, I had been referred to some patent, an IP firm in New York City. And I went there and the story is that, you know, it was a big hush-hush white shoe law firm, floor-to-ceiling glass windows. You could see the Statue of Liberty out the window, big round table. And here I am with my hand-sewn underwear in my backpack. So it was, I was a little nervous about it, but I pulled it out. And the patent attorneys were very positive. And they explained to me that in patenting, when you walk in with a working prototype, that they really like that because so many people don't have a working prototype when they come. So from there I found a firm that could create a proper prototype and do digital drawings. And from there, I just kept one iteration after the next until I got to the point where I am now.
So often when you're starting a business, it's not just about creating the thing that you're selling, but you have to figure out so many more things, right? From distribution strategy to marketing strategies to maybe product licensing and things like this. So, you know, one of the things that we hear about, particularly for women entrepreneurs, it's really hard to get access to capital. And it's really hard to get access to the right kind of mentorship with connections. So Suzanne, this time I'll start with you. How did you do those things?
I was extremely lucky. 30 years earlier, I had met an entrepreneur at a party given by my husband's law firm. And the entrepreneur is Dal Lamagna, who was the inventor of Tweezerman Tweezers. So fast forward 30 years, and by coincidence, I ran into the gentleman who had given the party where I had met Dal Lamagna so many years before. And I asked after Dal, and he put me in touch with him.
And Christine and Sasha, I'll ask you the same question.
I think for us, we were very fortunate that we were working in a brand design firm. So in terms of marketing and brand building, we had that expertise in-house, and the owners of that company gave us the flexibility to work on this while we did our day jobs. So I think that was maybe unique in an entrepreneur type growth cycle. But so we were doing that for several years before Sasha actually made the move. And, you know, we got office space. She went full time to Mama Va. And we have been fortunate, too, to connect with a group of venture capital that has been super helpful. And not only on the cash side, but on the advisory side as well.
We're speaking with Innovate Her finalists, Sasha Mayer and Christine Dodson and Suzanne Shoemaker. Coming up, we'll find out how the SBA has helped our guests with their companies. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Our guests this show is Sasha Mayer and Christine Dodson, founder of Mama Va, and Suzanne Shoemaker, founder of Undercare. So ladies, how did you find out about SBA's program to help women start businesses? Sasha?
There was a local incubator who called our attention to it and said, "Oh, you can pitch next week. You have to fly back from a business meeting we have, but you have the opportunity, in our case, to win $10,000, a winner-take-all prize." I believe around 38 companies applied, and then there was 10 finalists, and then we pitched for 3 minutes. And so that's how we got all the way to Washington.
Wow, that sounds exciting. Suzanne, how did you find out about Innovate Her?
I have worked with the Women's Enterprise Development Center in White Plains, New York, and they work together with the SBA. I took their 15-week class on entrepreneurship in 2013, and I continue to work with them and be in touch with them. And they told me about the competition and suggested that I apply.
Do you find that there's a lot of resources out there for women to start businesses?
Incredible.
What about you,
Christine? Yeah, I do think there are, particularly through the SBA, I see things that they're offering all the time.
So, ladies, I know that you all have different backgrounds and day jobs. I want to find out when you got bitten by that entrepreneurial bug. So, Suzanne, I'll start with you because you made a comment earlier that your kids said you were always coming up with ideas. So did you always know you wanted to be an entrepreneur?
No, I did not. I had no idea. I'm from an art background with very limited business experience. So I really never thought that I would become a founder or a CEO of a company. So it came as a surprise.
And tell me when it happened, right? I know that you told the story about seeing the woman in the Y and having this idea, but when did you really start to say to yourself, you know what, this is more than just a good idea that I could give to somebody else. I can make this happen.
I had followed a fairly traditional pattern. I graduated from college. I moved to New York City for a job in publishing. I got married. I raised three wonderful children. Along the way, I took art classes. And after a time when my children were small, I decided to pursue my MFA at the New York Academy of Art in New York in painting and drawing. And so it was a perfect way to keep myself stimulated while being a stay-at-home mom. A friend of mine was the headmaster at a private school in Westchester County where I live, and she asked me if I would teach art at her school. So I did that for a few years, but it really wasn't what I wanted to do. So I'd come up with the idea for Undercare, and I had decided to pursue it. It started off slowly, but then as the idea started gaining momentum, my youngest son went off to college, and at that point, I quit teaching to pursue building the company. That was about 4 years ago.
And Christine and Sasha, I'll ask you the same question. Do you still have your day jobs that you're doing? I think you said that Sasha had left full time for Mama Va, but Christine, are you still working?
So I actually work two jobs now. So I'm part time at Mama Va, part time at my original job. So,
and you're a mom.
And I'm a mom of three boys.
Third time job,
yep,
right?
Exactly. So for me, I'm definitely more conservative, and it has been something that I desire and am laying the groundwork for, but I'm definitely a little more cautious probably than Sasha was. But for us, now that the business is growing, I do what I can now. And, you know, my hope is that eventually I'll be there full time. And I don't think it'll be that long from now, honestly.
And Sasha, how about you?
I think back to your question about being an entrepreneur, my colleagues sometimes call me the reluctant entrepreneur, but I think there's something that we have in common, which is the desire to solve a problem that maybe nobody else has. And my youngest is now 10 years old, so I was nursing a very long time ago, but no one else seemed to be solving this problem. And the, you know, young moms who were coming up in the businesses that I was working with were still dealing with it, still pumping in restrooms. My sister had a child 3 years ago, and she was a props artisan for a theater company. She would send me this picture of her pumping in a room where they were storing the painting and the supplies. And it just continued to nag at me that nobody else was going to do it, that we should try to fix this problem.
Today, we're talking with the Innovate Her finalists, Sasha Meyer, Christine Dotson, and Suzanne Shoemaker. Suzanne, I got to ask you, you know, you've gone through this journey. If you were to go back and talk to somebody just starting out, what advice would you have to a woman starting a business today?
I think that I would say it's important to dream big and to work toward fulfilling your dreams, and to visualize success, have a picture of that. But having said that, I would add that it is easy to underestimate the amount of juggling and sheer determination that's required to get and keep a company going.
It's a 24/7 job. So Sasha and Christine, if you were to see yourself starting your company again or another woman in Vermont wanting to start another company, What advice would you have for her?
I would say only do it if it's something you care passionately about, because I think that makes all the difference. I can't imagine starting a business that wasn't something that was so heartfelt as this issue was to us. And I also think, as thinking about a career and connections and how important that is, and when you're building a business, that you can't be afraid to ask for things. So, you know, everyone in our family, our friends, our professional network, we have called on and leveraged in many ways, and you just can't be afraid to do that.
Can you have it all? Can you balance this and have it all and start a company? Sasha?
One of the things that I have found really empowering in this journey is to be able to share it with my kids. So this job is taking me away from my children in terms of time. But what it means is I open my computer and I practice my pitches on them. I share what meetings I'm having. I hope that they are learning that it's important to find something that you believe in and that you should be driving towards it. So that's how I sort of rationalize it in my world, is I'm sharing it with them because there's sort of no other choice. There is no boundary between work and home life right now. And I think they're inspired by it, and they provide some very good advice to me sometimes when I am sharing ideas and telling them what I'm doing at work.
So, Sasha, I've had a similar experience where, you know, guilt goes hand in hand with working moms, I'm across the board, at least for me. I let it go one day because I overheard one of my kids, and I have four kids just like Gigi, being very proud, telling somebody about what I did for a living. And I realized they were enjoying and living it, too, in a side I hadn't seen. Suzanne, do you have kids?
I have three children, but mine are a bit older. So at this point, everybody's out of the house and through college. So it's just me and my husband of 34 years. And actually, this entrepreneur career I've taken on at midlife is a very positive thing. It keeps me busy. It keeps me interested. It's been a very positive thing.
So how about challenges? I know that, you know, Aileen mentioned kind of balancing it all. Has there been a time for any of you, and Suzanne, sounds like maybe not for you yet, but have there been challenges or roadblocks that you've run into to the point that you just weren't even sure that you were going to be able to continue?
I mean, I just speaking, I think that my roadblock has been the 100% commitment. And for me, it's just that security of a job, and it's financial. So, and I also believe, and I'm going to tell Sasha's story of this morning, like her daughter had 104 temperature before she got on a plane at 4 o'clock this morning. And it's those things where you're like, is this worth it? What's, you know, but it is, because we worked hard in our jobs for somebody else. So I don't feel like this is work, because it's leading somewhere and we have control over where it goes. Even if it fails, it's amazing to be able to go to work and know that you're doing it for yourselves, the people who are now working in this business, and women who are benefiting from what we're doing.
Today in the studio, we've been talking with Erin Andrew, SBA, Sasha Mayer and Christine Dodson from Mamava, and Suzanne Shoemaker from Undercare. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.